Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Nicole.
Welcome to the Movement Toward Change podcast. We are using dance as a means to cultivate community and start conversation.
Today, we're honored to speak with Tom Vacanti. Tom is the dance program director and an associate professor of dance at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He has a BS in dance from Skidmore College, an MFA in performance and choreography from Smith College, and a certificate degree in costume design from Boston University. Tom has danced professionally with the Florida Ballet, Tampa Ballet, Colorado Ballet, Ballet Mississippi, Ballet Michigan, and Ballet de Panama. He was also chosen by Jacob's Pillow to represent the USA and their Russian-American exchange program. Tom is currently co-artistic director of Pioneer Valley Ballet, in addition to being certified in the Safe Bar Technique. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rachel and Nicole, for having me.
Awesome. So could you tell us a bit about your journey to this point and if a specific event has shaped your career?
Oh, yes. So my journey to this point, well, first off, I would have to say that I would have never guessed that I would still have a career in dance at my age. I thought my career in dance would have ended like any other professional. They tend to retire by, 35, 40, and many just choose totally different careers. But for some reason, I have stuck with dance my entire life, and it has been a rewarding journey, and a scary journey in some aspects too, but well, not scary, but, it's had its ups and downs. So, and if there was a specific event that shaped my career, I would have to say that it happened when I was at Skidmore College. So here's a plug for studying dance and studying ballet in college, because you can have these really potent and powerful experiences. So at Skidmore College, one of my professors was Elizabeth Carroll, who was a principal dancer with the Harkness Ballet in the 1960s and 70s. So, I was having one of my down days. Class was not going well. And I went up to her after class and said, "Miss Carroll, do you ever think I'm ever, ever going to be a dancer?" And she looked at me and said, "If you have to ask that question, then no, you will never be a dancer." And that said it all to me, that really it wasn't on her, it wasn't on anyone else but myself to take the responsibility to become a dancer, to train and to, negotiate through my career. But really the responsibility was on myself to do that, no one else's. And so from that moment on, it made total sense. And I went, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It will happen. So that has stayed with me my entire career.
Oh, that is such a cool story. It's just, reminds you that you do have control. It's not just kind of up to the universe. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And it is within, everyone's control. Well, there are always situations that are beyond your control. But as far as like dance is concerned and whether you can be a dancer or not, that's your decision.
Definitely. So did you face any challenges during your career as a professional dancer or choreographer or as a professor?
Yes, yes, and yes. There are always, always challenges. In particular, as a professional dancer in ballet, when I was dancing, it was a lot easier to get jobs, definitely. But, there were times that, we're tough. In particular, you know, I never had like the really great ballet body. I never had, you know, that just the natural capabilities, you know, physically as a ballet dancer. So, you know, I was always working through my physical challenges throughout my entire career. You know, and as a choreographer, yeah, you know, you walk into rehearsal some days and it's working great and you're just moving along. And then there's other days that are just, you know, not, it is not going to happen. And so then how do you proceed? You know, so it's always a matter of, you know, finding the ways to overcome the challenges with everything. And then, yes, same as a professor every single day. You know, what, you know, if this is not working, okay, we're going to try this.
What do you find usually helps you to overcome those challenges or kind of gather inspiration during times when inspiration is kind of lacking?
You know, I would have to go back to what I was talking about a couple of minutes ago, you know, as far as taking control of your experiences, taking control of, you know, how things are happening. So, you know, when my inspiration is lacking, I always know that I can, things change. Yeah. And so my inspiration is that, okay, at this moment, maybe things aren't happening as I really would love them to be happening. But then, you know, I go, yes, things change, other opportunities happen. You know, I might start getting inspired to do this because of this, you know? So I'm always looking beyond, you know, the problems and the challenges.
So what is the Safe Bar technique and what are the principles behind it? And maybe also what inspired you to begin teaching this method?
Yeah. You know, I always feel like this was a moment of fate that kind of changed. Well, through most of my early years teaching at UMass in the dance program, I was continually talking to the dancers, like, how do you start thinking about ballet? How do you start thinking about taking ballet class three-dimensionally? Like, your body is in the space. It is not just this flat body against the mirror. How do you find your body in space? And I was always continually talking about, you know, spiraling. And, you know, because going back to Elizabeth Carroll at Skidmore College, you know, she was always so big on épaulement and the upper body. We trained our upper bodies as much as we trained our lower bodies. And so there was this innate understanding of how the body, you know, spiraled into positions and how it moved into positions instead of dancing in a very flat way. So I was attending a conference in Paris in 2013. And one of our guest speakers at this conference was Alexander Muntz. And he was giving a demonstration of his new pedagogy really kind of based on biomechanics and somatic practices such as Alexander technique and Feldenkrais technique. And his whole class was based on spiraling. And I was like, yes, okay, so here I'm finally in a situation where here's this other person who is talking about the importance of, you know, the spiral of the body when you're dancing. So it was a kismet moment for me. That I was in the room with someone else who was really talking about the same things I was trying to talk about with my students at UMass. So that's how I came across Safe Bar. And also there's two parts to his training pedagogy. There's Safe Bar, which is really kind of based on a ballet bar, but then there is Safe Floor. So there's all of these other additional floor exercises in addition to the bar exercises. The SAFE method is so much based on the spiral of the spine and how the healthy body has the ability to spiral. Because he came across all of this. He was a dancer, principal dancer with the Berlin Opera Ballet in Germany. And he got to a point in his career where the doctors were saying, if you don't stop dancing, you will be crippled. You will be in a wheelchair because his back injuries were just so severe. So, you know, a dancer being a dancer never gives up. So he did stop taking class. He stopped taking ballet class, but he would go into the studio and try and figure out, you know, how he could heal his spine. And so through all of his research, it was like the spiral of the spine. A spiraling spine is the healthy spine. So he based all of his bar work on that and all of these floor exercises. And then also, you know, there's systems in our body that spiral as well. And so he always talks about when he teaches of how the fascia in our body. So it's not even necessarily muscles or bones. It's the fascia that covers the muscles that communicate and work in a spiraling way throughout the whole body. So that's a large part of his concepts as well, is, you know, stop thinking about bones and muscles and start thinking about the fascia, what's in between the muscles and, you know, and the bones. So it's all very interesting. And, you know, this is just like a quick 3-minute introduction to the SAFE method, but definitely, and I can give you the link to his website too, if you want to put it for your podcast viewers to just go and kind of explore what his whole system is about.
Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes.
So in what ways do you incorporate the Safe Bar technique into your ballet classes?
Well, like I said, I've always believed in, you know, how do I train dancers to move three-dimensionally? How do I train them to move, you know, in a freer movement through the ballet technique and the spiraling and the epaulement and the use of the head and how that translates through the spine, all of that. So it wasn't much of a jump to start incorporating, you know, a lot of his concepts into class. You know, one thing about the Safe Bar is generally most exercises are done facing the bar. And so when people are first introduced to this, it's a real challenge, you know, instead of one hand on the bar facing, you know, a certain direction, you are facing the bar and you're using opposite arm to leg, you know, so it's a lot for dancers who are just being introduced to it to really comprehend and understand. You know, because I totally remember the first class I took with him, and I was like, I had to totally, it short circuited my brain in some ways, my dancer brain, that I was working opposite arm to leg at the bar instead of same arm and same leg at the bar. So, you know, that is always like a leap for my students. If I, you know, when I do start incorporating, you know, some of these concepts, some of the exercises, but it makes total sense. And then I found that students start understanding the rotation of their legs better. And their body coordination better. So, you know, it is all of these exercises are so beneficial, you know, kind of weaved into, you know, a traditional ballet class.
Moving beyond the safe bar technique, what are some anatomically safe ways to approach the ballet technique, which often might place an emphasis on the line or the form and not so much on getting to those positions safely?
Yes. That's a really great question. You know, the ballet technique is a system. And this system, yes, requires that requires a certain amount of attention to the lines you're making with the body. And yes, you know, the pointed feet, the elongated legs, all of that is just part of the vocabulary. I think, so now I'm, so now I might be appearing to contradict what I said at the very beginning, but no, I'm not. I think really it's the responsibility of the teacher. It's the responsibility of the teacher to carefully train their students. So if you get a teacher that just goes, well, just get your leg up there, then yeah, that's going to be a mystery. That's going to be harmful. You're not really going to understand. Or if a teacher is like, well, just, you know, cram your fifth position or cram your first position, and they're out there. You know, actually, I mean, I had a teacher, Elizabeth Carroll, who insisted on a tight fifth position. But with that insistence, she also stood over her students and made sure they weren't pronating and they weren't doing this. And she was always continually looking at their alignment and how all of these things were happening. So, yes, I think if not enough attention is being paid when you're demanding these, you know, high extensions or the very tight fits, these are dangerous practices if you aren't really carefully monitoring your students and that you aren't carefully making sure they understand the concepts behind it all. You know, because I truly started training in ballet when I was 19. I was very late. I had started earlier. I had taken ballet classes previously, but serious training at 19, and my turnout was not great. You know, and my legs and my feet were not great. But I was in this, there were certain expectations and, you know, I had teachers that were just there watching continually and correcting continually. So I think, you know, yeah, that's my take on, you know, the insistence on, you know, all of these, what could be considered dangerous practices. I think they just need to be monitored. And also having teachers that understand the bodies they're working with, because there's more than one way to get a tight fifth position. There's more than one way to get, you know, high extensions or that sort of thing. But if you're just demanding of your students that it happen and just continually demand it and not teach it, then yes, it's going to be a problem.
That makes sense. So are there any specific practices that are, can be considered dangerous in an attempt to achieve specific technique?
Yes. And I see a lot when I flip through Instagram and I see the dancers on Instagram, I see a lot of very strange, strange things for me. And maybe I'm very old school, but yeah, overstretching and overstretching this kind of second split, you know, overstretching leads to lack of strength. And then once you get older, your ligaments are not going to be able to hold your body together. So in some ways, when I was a dancer, there was never this expectation that dancers are so stretched out the way they are now, like men and women. Like I look at both and, you know, it's this thing now. I don't know, on Instagram, there's that clock, you know, have you seen that? You know, the four, the six, I get to midnight and then I go to 2 a.m., you know? It's like, it just wasn't a thing like 30 years ago. That was not a thing. And so that concerns me that's like a goal as a dancer now to get that overstretched, you know? And in any ballet training system, you know, like the Russians, they never, you know, they value strength. You know, it has to be both. It has to be stretch and strength in equal amounts and never this kind of like, just go for the stretch sort of thing. So, yeah, so that concerns me that is like a thing these days, that's what has to happen. And sure, you want to be stretched out enough, just enough, you know, to get, you know, the highest extension you possibly can. Absolutely. But then to go beyond that's just dangerous later on down the road. You know, when you're 50 and 60 years old, I don't even want to imagine. Yeah. And, you know, and again, I guess I was just really blessed with a lot of teachers, sensible teachers, you know, even like hyperextension. If there was someone in class with a lot of hyperextension, it wasn't a matter of, okay, then don't take first position, go more to a second position so that you increase your hyperextension. No, because the more you just keep increasing the hyperextension, the weaker you're going to get, you know? So working with, you know, within your hyperextension, not increasing it, in particular, if you are super hyperextended, you know, hyperextension means you're weak in your quadriceps, you know? So when I see a student with hyperextension, like extreme hyperextension, it's like, okay, we need to work on quadriceps strength, you know, and working to how you work in a first position where your heels are as close together as they possibly can be, you know? So, yeah. So I think, I'm trying to think what else, you know, you just have to be, it's all just being sensible and knowing what your body can do and what it can't, you know, and not trying to wreck your body for some aesthetic that is not for unhealthy aesthetics. That's the word. Yeah. You don't want to wreck your body to get that beyond, you know, 180 split. You know, if your body does that naturally, okay. But it probably means you're a little weak too, and that you're going to have to, you know, increase your strength, that sort of thing.
I think I'm lucky if my leg goes past maybe 9 p.m. So.
Oh God. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. And when you get older, it gets worse.
Oh no. What are your thoughts on the foot stretchers going back to like Instagram trends?
Well, I'm not opposed to the foot stretchers because, and seriously, you know, when I was a dancer, I grabbed, you know, a pair of point shoes, an old dead pair of point shoes of one of the dancers in the company. And I would jam them on my feet and jam them under like a couch or something, you know, because I needed to stretch my feet. It did increase the flexibility of my feet. So if there were foot stretchers when I was dancing, I probably would have owned some of those just because your feet. Yeah. I mean, it's another stretch, you know, that yes, there are many people who need to stretch their feet. And then there's some that don't need to, you know, and yeah. And when I see, you know, these people with, you know, these beautiful feet, just, you know, putting their feet in the foot stretcher just to like stretch more their beautiful feet, that's a waste of time, you know. But would I recommend it for someone who had less flexible feet? I think I would. Yeah. And I keep going back to Elizabeth Carroll. She's, you know, she was my mentor and my idol. You know, and she would always say in class, you can always change your body. You can change your body. There's, you know, there's nothing, well, within reason, you can change your body. So again, I'm saying within reason, things like foot stretchers do work within reason. You know, you can't go totally insane overstretching your feet, you know. If you're that like obsessed with stretching your feet, then yes, that's a problem, you know. But stretching your feet before class because it helps, you know, it helps your tendons, it helps all of these things, absolutely, you know.
Yeah.
I think it just, again, everything in moderation and everything in with a, you know, everything being just being sensible about how you're training your bodies.
Yeah. And just kind of like bringing a sense of like mindfulness almost into it as well. So you're not just like, oh, my feet are not flexible enough, let me just jam them into the foot stretcher. That's very different than I'm going to slowly stretch them and
yes,
kind of like see how I feel. And if it feels, I think as dancers, we tend to know like good and bad pain. If we're feeling like a good stretch, then that's probably
yes,
okay, versus like a sharp pain, maybe we should stop.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And yes. And yes. And yes. You know, and that being said, I have never tried a foot stretcher. So I'm wondering if I should be recommending these, but I know for my old school way, you know, that was not, you know, that was our foot stretcher of the day, you know, jamming an old pair of point shoes on your feet and jamming them somewhere under something, you know. again, yeah, you know, and it's just a matter of, again, at the start of our conversation, it's a matter of taking responsibility, taking responsibility for yourself and for your body. And if something starts hurting, you know, or there's extreme pain, then you've got to listen to your body, you know, and then back off. You know, you have to understand the limits of your body as well. You know, that's just part of being a dancer, you know, understanding your body, understanding your tool, and taking care of it and making sensible choices.
Definitely. It seems like just overall having a sense of awareness and kind of also having patience with yourself, like going back to the foot stretcher. Yeah. You're not going to have these perfectly arched feet the next day. And
yes,
just getting the right expectations there.
Yeah. And understanding that everything is a process. You know, the most beautiful thing about ballet and dance in general, I think the most beautiful thing is there is no immediate gratification. And if you're in dance for immediate gratification, choose another career. You know, you've got to enjoy the process. You've got to enjoy the days where you see improvement in yourself, and you have to be kind to yourself on the days that you don't see the improvement. You know, it's all a process. You know, there is never an end goal where you're ever going to feel like you are like the perfect dancer. And that's the wonderful thing about it. It's not a bad thing to know that you will always have things to work on. You will always have things that, you know, will always be the next carrot in front of you.
Definitely. That's so true.
Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit, are these safe bar techniques applicable to other forms of dance? I know we talked a lot about ballet, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen a lot of modern dancers who are being trained in these systems as well. And in some ways, I feel like the safe bar techniques make ballet more accessible to dancers in other dance forms. And that's like across the board, I think, you know, it doesn't have to be just modern or contemporary dancers. You know, I honestly believe, you know, these things are applicable if you're a flamenco dancer, if you're a Bharatanatyam dancer, you know, all of these things. It's just an incredibly accessible technique. And when I was in the training program, they would bring in people from outside, and some would be dancers, and then other people would be straight off the street without any dance experience. And so then how do you teach this? You know, how do you get these concepts across? And a lot of times the people coming in with very little or no dance experience took to it a bit faster and understood the concepts a bit faster. Oh, or okay. I should say no experience, like ballet experience.
So if a dancer does not have access to safe bar classes, what other cross-training methods have you found helpful throughout your professional career?
Well, like I said before, I'm a dinosaur. And when I was a dancer, we didn't have really anything that's available today. Well, untrue. I remember I was dancing. I think I was dancing in Florida at the time. And there was this woman who approached me and said, "Hey, I'm certified in Pilates and in the Pilates machines." And I was like, "What's that?" You know, it so, and no, that's not true. I had heard about Pilates, but as far as like machines, like all the machines, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, "You know, I just want to give you like a free class on the machines, et cetera." And I was like, okay. So I went in for my free class and, you know, did all the machines and did all of these things. But then I left and went, I'm really not sure how to apply this to what I do in class. You know, there wasn't that connection. So I think I would encourage dancers to cross, to find other cross-training methods, but then it's got to make sense to them how it applies to their training and how it's going to apply to what they do in class, what they do in rehearsal, all of those things. So would I recommend anything in particular? I'm always one to recommend yoga just because it calms that the dancer down, you know, anything that's going to calm, you know, the, you know, a dancer who is so, you know, like I was said before, like a dancer who's like obsessed with this and obsessed with that and obsessed with, take yoga, please calm it down, get into your body, get into your brain, figure out your body, figure out, you know, all of these things. So yoga is always a good one. that because, yeah, when you're in dance class, it is so, you know, it is 300%, you know, you've got to put 300% of your brain and act and body into it in order to really, like, for that hour and a half to really get what you need to get out of class. But then I would cross train with something that just like takes it down a couple of notches.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, and I see plenty of dancers cross training with, you know, the running and, you know, and the weights and the, all these machines and all of these things. And I'm like, again, within reason, you know, you can't keep pounding your body. And at some point you've got to start doing things that, you know, work your body in a different way and in a different mindset. So that's what I would recommend. And, you know, part of going back to Safe Bar, you know, so much of it, in particular, the floor exercises are that kind of meditative thing. You know, it's very slow moving. And even a lot of the Safe Bar, some of the exercises are just like so slow moving that it becomes more meditative than, you know, so like pounding the body all the time.
Cross training, it's sometimes helpful to find a balance where maybe one or two days a week a dancer is, you know, running or doing the elliptical, and then they're also doing something like Feldenkrais or Safe Bar, something that's more like mind body low impact. So yes, you're kind of finding a balance of not just, you know, running 5 days a week, but if you feel like you need that strength, you need that cardio, it's possible to get some of it, but not all of it.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and when I was a dancer, you know, this thought about cross training and like running and building stamina and all of those things, it just wasn't part of the conversation. You know, you built your stamina in class. But, you know, I take a look at the dancers now and they're pretty darn amazing. You know, they're very athletic. So what we see today are very athletic dancers. And I have to say, you know, when I was a dancer, you know, at that time, Natalia Makarova and Baryshnikov, they were still dancing, you know, and Baryshnikov was the athletic one. Natalia Makarova was, you know, the artist. And you could just see that it wasn't always about technique. It wasn't always about the athleticism. It wasn't always about these things. And so that's what I kind of miss today. And yeah, I'm talking like an old person now, but I see the amazing athletics, and in some ways I wish I could start seeing some dancers that cared more about the artistry of it all.
Yeah, that is really interesting to think about kind of how the fields has developed and how people are approaching dance in general in terms of artistry versus athleticism.
Yeah. I mean, you go to any ballet performance now, and if you see anyone doing less than a triple pirouette, it's like, oh, they aren't good dancers. You know, they've got to be doing the four, the five, the six, the seven, eight pirouettes, you know, men and women. You know, that has got to be there now, and the super high extensions, and it has gotten very athletic, very, which, you know, I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing that, but I miss seeing the other part too.
So kind of switching gears a little bit, in general, dance majors in college are often really busy juggling dance, academic classes, rehearsals, and work. What are some other self-care practices that you find most useful for dancers?
Sleep. Sleep and rest. Yeah, you know, being a dancer in college is really... you will be the most busy you will ever be, I think, in your entire life in college, juggling, you know, dance classes, juggling rehearsals, juggling academic classes, juggling assignments and homework and all of these things. And I see it. I see it in my students that, and they are always like, I don't know when they sleep. So that would be the thing I would like, you've got to carve out, please, 7 hours of sleep. Your body needs 7 hours of sleep. And do that. And, you know, again, I would, because I see this kind of hyperactivity and college and universities require this kind of hyperactivity, that you're finding things like yoga, you're finding things like Alexander technique or Feldenkrais or these kind of things that really just kind of take you down, you know, bring the energy level inward a bit more instead of like outward all the time.
So what is your number one piece of advice to the Movement Toward Change dance community?
I think I would just recap what we've been talking about for the past 45 minutes, that your dance career is always within your capabilities, and your dance career depends on your choices, and your dance career depends on your kindness with yourself. And knowing your limitations and knowing your strengths, all of these things are just so important for your dance career. And just remember, no one is going to tell you when you're a dancer. You have to tell yourself you're a dancer. You have to tell yourself that this is what you want to do as a career and as a life's passion.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for this lovely interview and all of your advice and inspiration.
Thank you both. It has been a pleasure. And let's do this again sometime.
Yes, part two.
Part two.
So if you have further questions for Tom, you can contact him through his website, thomasvacanti.com. And we will also put this information in the show notes.